Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
I think the problem with power is one that affects everybody. I think it affects the shop steward who bullies his employees. I think it affects the mother who tries to dominate her children too much. I think it affects the businessman who is arrogant towards the people that he has under him. I think it affects the pastor who tries to play God. I think it affects every aspect of our lives. It is not just government officials.
That was the late Chuck Colson, former special counsel to President Richard Nixon. He knew firsthand what it meant to have a problem with power and to abuse it. Although he was part of the Watergate 7, Colson pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice in an unrelated case. He was sentenced to 1 to 3 years in jail and was released after having served 7 months. After trusting Christ as his Savior, Chuck founded Prison Fellowship on the conviction that all people are created in God's image and that no life is beyond God's reach, including prisoners behind bars. For the balance of his life, Chuck Colson worked with prisons to facilitate evangelism events, Bible studies, discipleship courses, life skills classes, and mentorship and reentry programs. Hello and welcome to Family Talk, the listener-supported broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, and you're about to hear part one of a very special edition of Family Talk. Did you know that the United States has about 4% of the world's population, but is responsible for 20% of the world's prison population? Nearly 2.2 million people are incarcerated in the U.S. right now, and more than 4.5 million more Americans are on probation or parole. These are sobering statistics, but there is some good news. Today, Prison Fellowship has grown into a ministry in all 50 states, featuring a staff of more than 268,000 volunteers. Now, starting with his autobiographical books entitled Born Again and Life Sentence, Chuck Colson authored 23 books, which sold 5 million copies. And then amazingly, he donated all the royalties from those books to Prison Fellowship. Other titles include Kingdoms in Conflict, How Now Shall We Live, and The Good Life. In addition, he hosted the nationally syndicated radio broadcast Breakpoint and wrote regular columns for Christianity Today. On April 21st, 2012, Chuck Colson went to be with the Lord at the age of 80. Now that brings us back to our program today. Back in 1984, Dr. Dobson invited Chuck Colson to his office to glean godly wisdom from a fellow warrior for Christ. Chuck reaffirmed Dr. Dobson's commitment to stand up for righteousness in the culture, to never waver from it, and to do it with boldness. What started out as a day of discipleship from one of America's greatest Christian apologists blossomed into a decades-long friendship and an unexpected multiple-day broadcast. They entitled it The Use and Abuse of Power. It's as relevant today as it was the day they recorded this conversation. You are in for a true tour de force here on Family Talk as we feature the first part of a three-part conversation that Chuck Colson had with Dr. Dobson back in 1984. So let's listen now to part one of a conversation we're calling The Use and Abuse of Power here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
I don't think, Chuck, you need a lot of introduction, but you were special counsel to the president during the Nixon administration, got involved in the Watergate affair, and went to prison for that. I wonder how long you're going to be identified that way. You suppose the rest of your life, your introductions will start that way?
Sure. The man who ran over, said he would run over his own grandmother, and who went to prison, the ex-convict.
But the Lord really used that experience, and from it has come your own prison ministry. So he has turned that tragedy to triumph, hadn't he?
Yes, I reflect back on that often, Jim, and I think the lowest point of my life was the first night in prison, the stale odors from the open urinals and the desperate feeling and the men crowded together and the guard shining a flashlight in your eyes every 2 hours. And I recently gave my papers to Wheaton College, and in the course of giving the papers, I went through them and read some of the things that I had written from prison, both once when I got a tape recorder in, which I wasn't supposed to have, and dictated some impressions, and another time when I wrote a letter to my prayer group. And I relived the despair that I felt at that point in my life, the awful feeling of having your wallet taken away. And I protested. I said, supposing I get out of here, nobody will identify me. I won't be able to identify myself. And they said, don't worry, you're number 23226, and that's that. and that awful sense of loss of your own personal identity.
Man, what a shock for a guy who just a few days before had been 10 feet from the president.
That's right. But a shock for anybody. You strip away anybody's humanity, you take away their identification, you take away their relationship with people on the outside, and you put them in a prison, and that's that lostness that after a period of time really begins to have its effect in terms of embittering people. Anyway, I was reading those papers and reliving it and sort of in a cold sweat. And then I realized I was giving my papers to Wheaton College because Wheaton has set up an institute for ministry to prisoners, which is now significantly endowed, and there will be ministry going on in the prisons for generations or until the Lord returns. And it grew out of that lowest and most desperate point in my life. And so you really do see the amazing way in which a sovereign God works often through the most desperate moments of our life. As a matter of fact, I think most frequently works through the most desperate moments of our life.
Well, that, in fact, is what I want to talk to you about today, that powerlessness as opposed to having power and what it does to people. But before I throw the first question at Chuck, I want to tell you what the last 14 hours have been like. Chuck did not come here to do a radio program. I asked him to come into the studio because our discussions have been so stimulating to me that I felt other people would benefit from it. But this was kind of a selfish thing. I invited Chuck here to just draw from what God has taught him and for the two of us to interact as brothers. And this has been an absolutely incredible morning for me. Chuck and Patty, his wife, flew in last night, and Shirley and I went to dinner with them, and that was a neat time together. And then we met together this morning. We've had our devotions together and just been sharing our own views of what God is doing in our ministries and the dangers that are implicit in public ministries and how Satan can get us off the path. And I just enjoyed those conversations so much, I asked Chuck to come on down to the studio and let's talk about some of it here. Let's get to that
issue.
Well,
I've enjoyed them just as much, and it's been a great blessing to me to be with you and to be with a brother who's we think alike on a lot of things, and I hope God is going to use our relationship one with the other to help. It sure helps me, Jim.
Well, there are times when you need to stop and take stock mm-hmm. of where you are, especially in a fast-moving, growing ministry like we're both experiencing. It can roll over you, mm-hmm. and you need to stop and bounce it off somebody else and say, now, wait a minute, are we on track here? And this was just so meaningful to me in that context, and it relates to what we want to talk about, having to do with power. What, in your view, having sat next to the president, having known all the secrets of state that there are to know, having worked with the most powerful man on the face of the earth, what does it do to a human being to have that kind of power as opposed to those who are totally powerless as you saw them in prison?
Well, you see, you got to approach that question from several different perspectives. The first perspective is that as a young political idealist, having worked in politics and government and in and out of campaigns all of my life, to arrive in the White House and to have the band playing Hail to the Chief and the flags furling and the crowds cheering and people around saying, yes, sir, no, sir. Well, nobody ever says no, sir. They always say yes, sir. An aide outside your door at all time, the ability to pick up a telephone and have a four-engine jet waiting at Andrews Air Force Base, to generals and admirals saluting, the aura of power, the trappings of power, are inherently corrupting. I went in there determined. At great sacrifice, I left a very successful law practice, lucrative law practice, determined to pass laws, to change things in the country, to bring my political views to bear.
You were not a Christian at that time.
I was not a Christian. But I went out of a sense of duty. And I now look back and realize how that aura of power that surrounded us began to warp your views. You began to feel you were a little bit above the law. You began to feel that you could do almost anything because your goals were so noble. As a matter of fact, self-righteousness was, for me, a real problem. And I think we have to understand, there's a great adage of Plato when he said, only those who do not seek power are fit to hold it. And the seeking of power in and of itself is corrupting just by the nature of it, just by the sinful nature of those of us who are part of the human race. It does this to us, and you have to really fight against it. You got to really wrestle with it daily. Paul said, I die daily. Paul had a big ego. Paul was a prideful man. Paul had good reason to be. Look at all the things he'd accomplished in his life. And then he had this extraordinary experience with Christ and met him personally, was taught by him personally. And because of that, he said, I had to die daily. Now, that's looking at power in one dimension. That's looking at what the aura or the trappings of power do to people. There's another dimension to power that I think is really pertinent to the times in which we live, and that is that there is the aura or the appearance of power or the illusion of power, but it isn't real power. One of the things that led to my conversion was when I walked out of the White House, I realized that most of the problems I'd worked on when I started in government were worse when I left than when I began. I realized that while I thought I was influencing things, most of the battles that I fought were with the Congress over who would have control over a particular program or what we were going to put in the budget. And I realized that the power of government is vastly overrated. And it led to sort of an emptiness in my own life because I was thinking I've devoted my life to this and it really hasn't mattered all that much. And that was one of the things God used to begin to soften my heart to look for the real values of life, which is the power of the King of Kings living in us, the eternal values of God, which are so transcendent to the momentary battles and power struggles of man. Jacques Ellul, a French theologian and historian who's written some marvelous books, one of them, The Presence of the Kingdom, which is a powerful book about Christian living in society today. He wrote a book prophetic for our times. It is entitled The Political Illusion. And Ellul's thesis is that politicians make people think that they have all the power because, and that they can solve all their problems because that's how they acquire more power and more power. And then in the age of the media plays the game with them because the media can focus on government and make it appear that government has all power. And that sells newspapers and gets people to watch television. And, of course, the media gains power as a result.
By association,
really. Sure, and profits because in this country, at least, they're private enterprises. And so there's this vicious circle that begins with a politician saying, we can solve all your problems. Then people are lulled into this belief of the political illusion, and they begin to do nothing. And Ellul's fundamental thesis is that the only thing that stands between man and totalitarianism are private voluntary associations. It's only when people get together and do things as people, when they get involved in their community, when they begin to help people. Now, he writes as an evangelical Christian. But what he is saying is that the defense in this media age in which we begin to build our trust and faith in institutions, the only defense against that is private voluntary action. That's what so excites me about the ministry I'm in, because it gets people, lay people, involved doing something with their Christian faith. And it shatters the political illusion. And we Christians in particular have got to look at things right now in perspective. And it's very important we register and vote and get into politics. But don't do it with the illusion that government is going to solve all of our problems. We're going to win some battles there. But the kingdom of God, the battle for the kingdom of God goes on in the hearts of man.
This subject absolutely fascinates me because it's very much related to the profession that I've chosen. And I see it in newborns. Research is pretty clear on this, that the first day home, the first day after birth, a child reaches out for the manipulation and the control of the adults that are around him. The very first day, every mother knows this, but it took the researchers all these years to come up with it. But there is a desire for power, power being defined as the ability to control yourself, your circumstances, and other people, built into human nature. And the interesting thing is that the more you get, the more you want. It is never satiated. Right. And you and I were talking earlier today about the physicians that I worked with in the medical school who had incredible power. Their patients worshipped them. Mm-hmm. Their reputations were worldwide. The money that they had, the status that they had was almost unlimited. And yet, instead of satisfying those inward needs, the ego needs, instead of finding themselves, their egos became more infantile and their demands more incredible. And power does that to you. It's insatiable. It's not like a good meal that's been fixed and you eat it and for a while you're not hungry anymore, but it's just a bottomless well.
Mm-hmm. Well, power is destructive in the sense that the more you have, the more you have to have. And of course, that's what leads people to start out often with relatively noble motives, but then the constant desire for more power, for more adulation, for more ego stroking, leads them to more and more extreme measures, and that's how you see empires degenerate.
Was that the downfall of the Nixon administration?
In part it was. In part it was because we were in a constant battle for power against the press and the Congress, and particularly against the press. And so we had declared war, and and they saw us gaining power over them, and we saw them gaining power over us, and
they
Agnew declared war on the media, and they weren't going to be satisfied until they had wiped us out. It was a giant power struggle, and we lost. But I think the problem with power is one that affects everybody. I think it affects the shop steward who bullies his employees. I think it affects the mother who tries to dominate her children too much. I think it affects the businessman who is arrogant towards the people that he has under him. I think it affects the pastor who tries to play God. I think it affects every aspect of our lives. It is not just government officials. When you look at power, don't sit back, folks who are listening on the radio, and say, well, that doesn't involve me. It sure does involve you.
It involves you and me, Chuck, in visible public ministries like we're in. What are the dangers to us?
We're in, I guess, as dangerous a position as anybody can be in. And after the National Religious Broadcasters, there was a press conference, and I had a press conference because I'd given the opening night address. And there was a man from a secular newspaper sitting in the front row. And the first question, he said, Mr. Colson, aren't born-again Christians supposed to be loving and caring for one another? I said, yes. Compassionate for the world, he said. And I said, absolutely. He said, well, I don't understand. He said, I've walked around these exhibits here at this convention. And he said, seems to me the bigger the exhibit, the more arrogant the person who's manning the exhibit. And I defended my brother, and I said, look, they've gotten into this business because it's a ministry, it's God's calling. And many of them have started on a shoestring, and they're building up their ministries, and they're proud of it, and that's an understandable human reaction. And and then he began to describe the various things that different people had said to him at the different exhibits. And I was, again, defending my brethren, but at the same time I was cringing inside because I knew exactly what he was talking about. And it was kind of interesting. After the press conference, I went over and I talked to him, and I said, look, don't judge all Christians by some of us who can't handle power. I said, any more than I'll judge all people in the media by some of the things that you folks do. And he said to me, I'm a recovering alcoholic, Mr. Colson. And he said, I really was asking those questions because I'm searching. But he said this. He said, I run into an awful arrogance among people in Christian ministry. And he's right. The idea of reaching into millions of homes, as we're doing right now, is a very awesome thing. And running big ministries, and particularly for people who know what Christ teaches, and suddenly we have all this power. Now, I wrestle with it. I have a terrible time. Pride was my sin. Pride was what drove me all my life. The most deceitful thing is our man's own heart. And so I'm not sure I can ever be honest with myself. I try to be. I ask my friends to be honest. I read all the critical mail that comes to our ministry. I can't read all the mail that comes in, but any letter of criticism has to come to me. I want people to tell me. I ask them to. I go out of my way looking for them to tell me, because I know I won't see it in myself, and I know it was the deadly snare of my life when I was in politics, and I'm scared of it. But I believe this is God's call, and I got to sort of, like Jonah, be the reluctant prophet who goes and does what God calls, hoping and praying I can forestall the inevitability of my own pride and ego getting in the way. And the only way I'm able to deal with that is to get out of the public light for a while. I just have to go off for a couple of weeks and study and read and not get that. I don't ever walk on an airplane or into an airplane terminal or a restaurant. Invariably, people will come and talk to me, and it's always very nice, and it's wonderful. But I fight this.
That's power.
That's power. Sure is. And it's inevitable in some senses, but we have to deal with it. Everybody has to deal with it in their lives. Everybody has power. A parent has power over his children. The question is how you deal with it. Now, power is not inherently evil.
It's what it does to you.
It's what it does to you. Power is inherently corrupting, but not inherently evil. Power comes from God. I look at someone, but the paradox, of course, is the more you get rid of it, the more you have. You give it away. I look at Mother Teresa. I received a letter from her as I was telling you last night, Jim, and I was terribly impressed that she had taken time to handwrite a letter, until I inquired and found out that she doesn't have a typewriter, that any letter that she sends, she handwrites. She has no power in the sense that she doesn't have computers and buildings and
no organization.
Budgets and baptisms and buses and all the signs of Christian success. But she has enormous authority. And it's an authority that she has earned by virtue of serving others. A little bit of what we were talking about earlier. She has come to know God in a way that is a very intimate fellowship by sharing in the suffering of people around her. Now, this has given her authority, no power. No money. When the Pope was in India and left his automobile with her, a white limousine as a gift to Mother Teresa. She accepted it graciously. She didn't come up with any false humility, and she didn't embarrass the Pope. She simply took the car and then auctioned it off and sold it and put the money into the proceeds, put the proceeds into her work. But she would be a classic illustration to me of authority which God invests in us by virtue of faithful service and obedience, which can be 100 times more influential than the use of raw or naked power, which depends upon force. And you see, authority always has a moral foundation, which power may not.
Talk a little bit about the power that comes from the media. Are we out of harmony with him in making use of electronic avenues that are available to us to communicate today?
Oh, no. I will often find people who say, well, if you really want to be biblical, you've got to do exactly what Paul did. And that is, you take sailing ships and you walk over land and you carry all your possessions in your back because Paul did it. Well, that's absurd. Paul used the resources that were available to him in the culture and the technology at the time, and we're supposed to do exactly the same thing. And it's certainly not wrong to use it. I think.
But you do feel it's not being used right in many contexts.
I've been very critical of much of religious broadcasting in America today, particularly Christian television, which I think is pandering to the egocentric nature of American culture. I think what we're really saying to much of the world in a form of pop Christianity is, so you really want to get your own thing and do your own thing, and you really want to succeed, and you really want to win, and you really want to gratify yourself. Well, we Christians have got a better formula than you secular people. We've got God on our side. And if you pray to God, he's going to solve your financial problems. If you pray to God, he's going to bless your life abundantly. And look at us in this gorgeous, attractive, multi-million-dollar studio. See how God blesses us, and you can know God and be blessed too. Now, that's cheap grace. I picked up a newspaper recently, and it sort of captured it all. There was a thought for a day from a prominent Christian pastor. And up at the top of the page, they always have a thought for the day every day, some quote that the editors choose. And this one they chose from a pastor who will remain unnamed. And it said, "Put God to work for you in this divinely ordered capitalist system." And see, that isn't just bad theology, because God was not created for man's pleasure. Man was created for God's pleasure. It's not just bad theology, it's heresy. It is an appeal, not even a subtle appeal, to the egocentric, materialistic nature of man. We call people to come to Christ not because there's something in it for them, but because Jesus Christ is truth. He is God incarnate. Yeah. It is the plan of creation embodied in the person of Christ. That's why you come to Christ. And you come to Christ whether it is going to mean that you're going to prosper and have 2 cars and a nice home, or whether you lose your life. But you come to Christ because it's true. And we sell a cheap grace, as Bonhoeffer called it, on much religious broadcasting. And I addressed the national religious broadcasters and told them so. And it was a sobering experience for the first 15 minutes of my speech.
But, dead silence.
Right? Yeah. But then there were little ripples of applause. And I think people began to understand what I was saying. I said, if we dare to speak for God, if we dare to speak for a holy God, then we have an awesome responsibility to present the whole truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the bad news of the conviction of sin before the good news of the redemption, the fact that Christ is calling us to be obedient, to live as Christians in a world where it may cause us to be persecuted and suffer and to be ridiculed. And it is not simply a religious adaptation of the Me Too, give me everything I can get secular world. And if we make it that, we'll one day be called to account, if not by the disillusioned masses we have led into this false Christianity, then surely by the sovereign God we believe in.
Chuck, can we carry this on next time?
I'd love to.
You're listening to Chuck Colson, special counsel to President Richard Nixon and founder of Prison Fellowship, here on Family Talk. That was part one of a completely spontaneous 3-part conversation with Dr. Dobson entitled "The Use and Abuse of Power." You know, God used the one thing in Chuck Colson's life that he couldn't brag about, his prison sentence for abuse of power, to draw him into a relationship with Jesus Christ. Plus, his 7 months behind bars planted the seeds for the international ministry now known as Prison Fellowship. Hearing this testimony, I'm reminded of the words of the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 12:9. He's taken his issue of the thorn in the flesh before the Lord, and the Lord responds to him by saying, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." In prison, God gave Chuck Colson a lesson in what really matters. And it's not earthly power. I love how he put it. It's the power of the King of Kings living in us, the eternal values of God, which are so transcendent. Now, to learn more about the late Chuck Colson and the Ministry of Prison Fellowship, visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. And while you're there, if you missed any portion of this broadcast or you want to review it again, you'll hear that there as well. drjamesdobson.org/broadcast. And remember to join us again tomorrow for part two of Chuck Colson's fascinating conversation with Dr. Dobson entitled The Use and Abuse of Power. For everyone on the team here at Family Talk, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for joining us today.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.